Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, today's author has quite the varied background. He was born in Ogden, Utah, the third of three sons. He started his first business as an eight-year-old in California selling fresh lemonade made from the lemons that his father grew, and he never stopped exploring and enjoying life. He is Marvin Crowther. Marvin's father and uncle taught him to paint houses, and at the age of 15, he began contracting house painting. This led to land development, hotel ownership, mining and farming, restaurant management, and a position with the Internal Revenue Service. He has spent the last 11 years as a self-employed tax preparer. And right now, we are going to find out why he now adds author to his list of accomplishments. So welcome to the network, Marvin.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, it's good to have you here. I was so interested in your story because you do have quite an interesting tale about how your first novel came about. It's titled Life's Tangled Trail. So share that with us, if you would.
Actually, my grandfather left the manuscript with my mother. Now, when my mother passed on, I inherited the manuscript. So I went through and I decided to edit it. It was written in the 30s, so it was typed out. So I had to scan it and write it out. And in editing his manuscript, I learned so much about my grandfather that I wanted to share my story in the same way. I published it under my grandfather's name.
Did he have that title, Life's Tangled Trail?
Yes, that was his title.
Okay, all right. So it had been in the family. Had you known your grandfather?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I knew him for about 20 years.
Oh, okay, good. So you were old enough to know him well. What a gift that was, like finding a little piece of gold, right?
Yes. I learned so much about him.
And what did your family think of your publishing that book?
They're excited. I think they're the ones that buy it.
Okay. Well, it's very personal, and it shares a lot of family history, and it was pretty interesting that your grandfather actually took the time to write it out.
Yes. He did a longhand, and he typed it up, mm-hmm. and he corrected it. Those days were a nightmare.
Oh, absolutely. Was an old typewriter, huh?
Yes, the old manual typewriter.
Yep, yep. Well, I'm not that old, but I actually remember those. My family had typewriters, and we had some of the old ones from my grandparents. And yeah, trying to make a change with that whiteout paper, I don't even know, it might have been worse in the 30s.
Oh, he went through and just crossed it out and handwritten, hand-ruled above the correction.
So that was quite a task for you to take that apart and put it back together again.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So was that your aha moment? Was that what inspired you to write?
Yes. When I got done, I decided I could do it, and I decided I had stories to tell.
Mm-hmm. So your first book, what was that titled?
That was Mitt Ranch Escapade.
Mm-hmm.
It was a mystery. It's a mystery novel, and it covers events that kind of circle around life experience I've had. I put these life experiences together into a mystery and created characters kind of based on some of the characters from my grandfather's book. Mm-hmm. I connected the two together.
Okay.
For becoming a series.
So why a mystery?
I've always loved mysteries. I like a little mixture of mystery and romance and whodunit, why is it being done. Kind of the way my whole life has been is solving problems. Solving puzzles.
And you've had a very rich and varied life with lots of experiences as well. So maybe tell us a bit about the book.
Yeah, it starts out with a couple from Life's Tangled Trail going up to a resort up in the mountains. And there they meet a young man who's a logger. And this logger was being, finding that people were stealing his log. He caught them and put them out to dry, and they were disappearing. So the mystery focuses around why these logs were disappearing. And the adventures go forth from there.
We don't want to give any spoilers, right?
No, I don't want to give too many spoilers.
And again, title-wise, why Schmidt Ranch Escapade?
Well, Escapade is just another name for a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And Schmidt Ranch is a name that just struck me. It's a little ranch out in the middle of nowhere, abandoned years ago.
Now, your next book was Anything Can Happen at Midnight?
Yes.
All right. Now, this was a fiction novel that covers a turnaround of a failing donut shop. So where did that where did that idea come from?
I actually worked in a donut shop, managed one. And some of the things that are happening in the donut shop are experiences I had myself when I was working. Strange things happen at midnight, especially when you're here in the downtown. You meet a lot of interesting characters. You see a lot of things go on. And here again, there are things that are happening that the manager is trying to look into and trying to resolve. So each day he faces many challenges. He faces many mysteries that he's trying to uncover and find out why this shop is failing, what he has to do to make it succeed. And I think, well, many of us have these same challenges every day.
That's true. You say they overcoming obstacles from unproductive employees, organized crime, and government in building a successful business.
Yes, it seems like everything's against this manager. He's working very hard to find people that will support him and finding ways to overcome all these obstacles.
I guess you wouldn't typically think of organized crime in a donut shop, right?
Well, not so much in the donut shop, but it influences the forces that are against this manager.
Interesting. Anything can happen at midnight, and I would imagine then something happens at midnight?
Yes. He winds up being in that shop many times at midnight, meeting very interesting people, having interesting events, having to overcome people coming in to rob him. He's having to overcome that. Having to overcome people that are coming in under the influence of drugs or alcohol, the fights. Many things happen. A mixture of all.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And then your next book, This Caldera We Live In, is a controversial book disputing many unproven theories that have cropped up in our education series over the last 100 years that are mistakenly taught as truth. And you say including evolution and global warming. So there's lots to talk about here. What prompted you to go from a fiction novel in a donut shop to this type of story?
Well, that's actually one that came to mind when I was working for the IRS. I was read a report that stated that the California Board of Education has now decided that evolution is proven because it's been taught for 50 years. And I looked at that and I go, what? Just because it's been taught for 50 years, how does that prove it? And I started thinking about evolution and the various things I've seen in my life that prove that it's not, there's more evidence that evolution didn't take place than there is that it did. So this book was written as a means of confronting the whole idea that truth comes from teaching for a period of time. My grandfather was a predecessor to paleontologists. He went out and he found dinosaur eggs. He taught me all about evolution. He found petrified dinosaur eggs and showed me these eggs. I'd look at them, and they were solid as rock. You could polish them. They were beautiful. And he'd tell me, these eggs are just jelly. How could they have possibly survived more than a day or two without being destroyed? How could they have been turned into rock? I've considered that. I've looked at the mountains and the rates of erosion and considered all these things that influence the Earth, and actually sat down and did calculations and said, okay, if this mountain's eroding at this rate, how long would it take it to go into the sea? And in most cases, if they were 4 million years old, the highest mountains would be gone. Also, these things that petrify, they'd have to petrify quickly. They couldn't petrify over a period of thousands or billions of years. Otherwise, they would disappear. My grandfather has shown me petrified fetuses, petrified animals, petrified flesh. Anyway, it made me think, and I've gone through and I've in this book and it showed studies of various features of the Earth and how they relate to actually a short period of time of creation rather than a long period of time of evolution.
It's interesting that people tend not to question, and especially not to question what's taught in school.
Well, I think we go to school, we learn, we say, okay, that must be right, we turn around and teach it again. When I was growing a youth, I always liked to check it out and figure out, okay, is this really right, or is it not right? I'd question the teachers, and I think I annoyed my teachers because I had these questions for them. Mm-hmm. And some of them just kind of shut me down. They didn't want to deal with it. That's the way we've been taught. That's the way it is. Mm-hmm. I'd look at the question. I go, okay, why? Why is it that way? How did something be created from nothing? And that's been my biggest question. How could a big bang out in the middle of nothingness create things, create planets and suns? And anyway, the book is just an expansion of my curiosity about something had to be created by something. There has to be somebody to organize it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it will tickle people's minds because there's so many times, you know, you talk about teachers, and I've known many in my lifetime that started way back when, came up with a lesson plan and just taught the thing for 35 years until they retired. And as you say, no questions asked, and the kids that ask questions are the difficult ones, and nobody looks left or right.
Well, that's the whole purpose of my book. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I'm absolutely correct. I'm saying, hey, if I just get one person to look at this and question, mm-hmm. I've accomplished something.
Exactly. You're right, Marvin. You don't have to be correct. But what you are doing is causing others to perhaps say, oh, maybe I should question as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about global warming as well. What are your thoughts there?
My thoughts are that nature creates more of the problems on Earth than man, as far as they talk about CO2, which I keep reading is our most dangerous pollutant. And it's our volcanoes are the ones that create CO2, more so than any person or any animal. I don't think man has any control over volcanoes. And the last I read, when we breathe, we create carbon dioxide. And in turn, that carbon dioxide is taken in by plants. And then the more carbon dioxide, the more plants. So we may be defeating our own purposes by reducing those CO2 emissions. because plants in turn break out the CO2 and return oxygen to us.
Well, nature is a very delicate balance, and I think any time you have man coming in to tinker, you're going to upset that balance, and who knows what the final result will be.
True. Now, when I drive through the desert and I go by a green field, the temperature drops by the green field. I've noticed that my whole life. And the climate is better around where there's water, around where there's where man has gone in and has taken the water and has cultivated. More animals live there, more people live, and more plants survive where man has cultivated. When we go out into the uncultivated lands, there's less plants, less animals, and the temperatures are higher. So my thinking, as we cultivate the land and utilize the resources, we actually maintain the temperatures and create a more mild climate. Why is leaving a place unattended going to help with global warming? If by cultivating and planting and making it green makes things more normal.
But you're also bringing in synthetic chemicals to do so. It's not done in a natural way anymore.
Yeah, there is that. A lot of these chemicals that I read about as a concern are naturally found in the earth. We need to look at it maybe from a different perspective. That the earth is able to absorb and cleanse some of these things. It's just if you get too much lead in one place, you may have a problem. But I've tested soil on farms and mines, and the natural soil has lead and arsenic and all these chemicals we're concerned about.
Well, this looks like an interesting book then. Is it out already?
I've taken it back to edit. I put it out about 15 years ago, and I took it back to take another look at it and re-edit it.
Okay.
So it's going to take some more editing.
Okay. This caldera we live in, it's something we can look forward to.
It actually looks at the, I live in the Great Basin. Mm-hmm. And you look around the Great Basin, you have many of the same features you have when you stand in a volcanic caldera, such as Yellowstone. And that's most of what I've concentrated on in that book is the similarities between the Great Basin and, say, Crater Lake, mm-hmm, or Yellowstone.
Right.
And I've taken those features and showed how there's indications that this was a supervolcano that covered most of Nevada, a good piece of Utah, Oregon, parts of California and Idaho. Yeah, when I put it out as a sample, I had a lot of people look at it, and a lot of people go, well, you put this in the fiction category. It doesn't belong in fiction.
Mm.
It belongs in either science or somewhere else.
Have you made that determination yet?
Well, I haven't. I'm still thinking I'll put it in fiction because it's there to make people think. It's not there to say, this is absolutely, mm-hmm, scientific proof.
Right. A thought-provoking book.
Yes, thought-provoking.
Absolutely. So what's next? Are you working on anything else?
Well, I'm still editing my new book, Anything Can Happen at Midnight. When I get that one out, I'm considering going back to how things were in the late 50s, early 60s for kids growing up, how much different things were before we had computers, before we had iPhones that did everything, for us and integrate the way we used to go out and take things from the junk piles and create scooters and bicycles, skateboards. The first skateboards weren't bought in the store. We built them, and we rode down the sidewalks on them.
Yep.
We built wagons and coaster cars. We built tote goats. And even little race cars. We took lawnmower engines and put them on a framework and built go-karts. That's how things, I just wanted to, that would be the next thing, next project.
I would enjoy that. I think a lot of people would. The kids these days are so immersed in their technology that nobody really goes outside and plays anymore or even knows what that means. I would look forward to that book.
Yes. I'd like to bring in, we used to play street ball.
Mm-hmm.
Used to mark bases in the road in front of the house in the neighborhood. And all the kids would gather and we'd play street ball or we'd go and play army.
Yeah, we played army.
I remember days of 40 or 50 of us out playing together.
That's so true. Played army. I used to play army with my brother. I mean, jumping rope and hopscotch and dodgeball. I mean, just we'd play in mud and spread it on the slate sidewalk and watch it dry. I mean, that was fun.
We built boats. When it rained, we ran out and floated them down the gutter. Everything was an adventure in those days.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to kind of I'm writing these books for my children to look at and say, okay, that's how things were at different times.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we can benefit from taking, rather than throwing stuff away, maybe we could take it and make something out of it and have fun.
Right. Kind of an inspiration to your children as your grandfather was to you when he left his manuscript behind.
That's the idea, yes.
Mm-hmm. I think there's no greater gift than that. We lose our tradition. Nobody really talks anymore. So to at least put it in writing, it will be there into perpetuity.
Yes.
I like it. I like it a lot. Well, let's talk about your writing process. Do you write every day?
I'm still working, so I prepare taxes for people. And then when I have a break, I'll sit down and write. I'll just get my thoughts on paper or on the computer. I'll write out chapter by chapter, and then I'll think through and maybe add a chapter in the middle or at the end. And then when it's all written out, I'll go back and say, okay, now it's time to go back and make my sentences make sense. So I'll go through and I'll make the sentences make sense and add words I've left out, correct things that I've messed up on, and then I'll go back and try and make the story fit the way I want it. Change things around and change wording and then try to make it flow nice.
Mm-hmm.
So before I'm done, I'll probably have read my book 8 or 10 times and gone through and made corrections and then I'll bring it up on the screen so it looks like a published book. Then I'll read my published book and see if it's the way I want it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll make more corrections until it flows and looks and feels right to me.
Right. Do you have someone else do the final edit for you?
I'll have someone else take a look at it. Yes.
That's such a process, the editing, because as a writer, as you said, you just want to get it all out right at first because there's that rush of, then you've got to look at it. And by the end of the time, as you say, 8 or 10 times, it's hard to pick up errors because you know what you wanted it to say. And it tends to look correct when in fact, sometimes it isn't.
Well, what I find happens, I'll look at a sentence and go, well, okay, that isn't saying what I meant it to say. There's half of it missing, so I'll go back and fill in the spaces and switch it around so it actually says what I want it to.
Mm-hmm. A lot of work in being an author, for sure. Well, Marvin, is there anything that we missed that you wanted to talk about today?
We talked about a lot.
We did talk about a lot. Tried to cover as much as we could. Well, then, as we begin to wrap up, where can folks go to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your books?
The book is available on Amazon under the titles Life's Tangled Trail and Smith Ranch Escapade. And I do have a website on YouTube under Life's Tangled Trail or under B.B. Cole Company, LLC, the name of my publisher.
So folks can find you there. And do you have a personal website?
mcrowther.com. That's my business website.
Okay.
For my tax business.
Oh, okay. Well, we can read your books and get our taxes done, right?
There you go.
Oh, my gosh. Well, any final words before we say goodbye?
Keep writing. I write for my family and descendants, and I hope we can all share a good word with one another.
Absolutely. We need that for our times. Thank you for sharing who you are. And I think just the whole message of today is that people need to stop, think, and question, right?
Yeah, we got a question.
More of us need to do that. I agree. Well, my friend, it was a pleasure to meet you and share you with our listeners, and good luck to you, and we will just keep our eye on you and pick up your next book. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. You have a good day.